Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a review of Toy Story 4, a film that I saw with my kids earlier on today at the beautiful little Glenbrook Cinema. So Glenbrook is sort of like a little magic hidden valley at the back of Sydney, full of surprises and greenery and canyons, and you know, it's a really beautiful little place, and it's got a little cinema. And the cinema, yeah, I've known the proprietor for a long time. It's a real sort of a school of arts hall. It's got their piano from the silent movies time, when the person used to play the piano, and the sort of iron cross supports poking through the roof, and the speaker systems is basically your home speaker system. Rather than four, they've got six home speakers up there. It still gives decent sound, sort of, but it's not the deep Dolby sounds and stuff like that, but it's still the beautiful atmosphere going to it. And I went with my kids to Toy Story 4, and really, just off the top of my head, I'm going to do a review of it, and you'll hear me puffing. I'm actually at the bottom of a gorge and walking up this slope, part of cardiac rehab, of just absolutely slogging away, reducing the amount you eat. Now, I must admit, I was a bit had a bit extra, so I feel I've got to really, you know, that's having a little bit extra. I think I snuck, we had sausages for this night out, and I ate a few more. I only ate one bun, of course, but you know, still, you give it. And I think I ate something else. I can't quite remember what I ate, but it is really a blow-by-blow, calorie-by-calorie battle that I'm up against. Okay, Toy Story 4. Woody is Tom Hanks, and he's just got this very, I suppose, likable American sort of innocent voice. It's sort of, I think he played Apollo 13, and what's the name of his the FedEx Stranded or something like that. There's a few, and obviously Forrest Gump. What's the name of that that volleyball he grew and had a relationship? So there's a very familiar voice, and the character's well established, and you sort of it sort of started like the first Toy Story was, oh my god, they're actually trying to actually make something, an animation, not from it's all been done before. It's an animation not from paintings, but completely computer animated. So the lighting and everything is rendered by ray tracing. You can imagine them accepting it and then going back and a fair amount of hours of computing power going in. And I sort of know sort of how many hours it was just to do a couple of seconds back in the late 80s. You know, so it's silicon graphics machines just plundering through. So just before this, they had Frozen 2, and there's very much, what are we going to do? We're going to have, I think, Shrek and all this stuff with powerful female roles. The novelty of having a powerful female role is... it is a change, it is a bit surprising, but sort of like it's not as surprising as it could be. I think so Frozen was interesting. He had powerful female figures, and it's a little bit hard to. So we saw Frozen 2, and you had this massive impression. They were doing a rendering of the sea breaking, and this, the person deciding to run into the sea, and it looked. I think, you know, there was Finding Nemo where they did water scenes, and allowed three. You know, Nemo had a three-dimensional thing, so things could move around three dimensions. So that water was a great thing. I was thinking the Monsters Inc. They're getting hair going into it, and so the first what is it, Toy Story, they didn't do hair very well, and things were flat panelled. There wasn't a lot of gloss aspect just thrown about the place. It wasn't just accepted. Accepted there, and obviously there's a huge step up in computing power from 1990. You know, that's when did it come out? Possibly, probably 1990. I don't know when. I think it came out in 1991. First Toy Story. So we're looking at probably something on a quarter of a century of computer power going up. So they sort of had the iconic face and features, and they had to stick to it without generating too much to it. And so it's a really useful thing in that there are toys, and it was a Toy Story, and you could add you know, admit that you could have a low degree of realism. Now, for me, the very first sequence, they had the Disney stuff, and then you had the Pixar, and you they had that 70s desk lamp, which I just absolutely adore. This is with the pantographic springs, and it jumped along and smashed the eye down. And then all of a sudden, it began to rain on the lamp, and the sound there, and the water there, and then what it did is it then, like, it was a lamp, you accepted it as a lamp, it wasn't Toy Story, and then it was this high resolution rain, when I can say it's completely. Yeah, for me, completely realistic. So I could see different drops, things splashing. Even the minutest things were, you know, just done. So you can imagine a single drop going down, and just add more of them going through. So the water, as the water ran through, the light reflected, and it did all the right things. And so it looked as if you're filming live rain. And so it was this sort of high-end introduction into a high level of graphics. So if you just suddenly hit the high level of graphics, it would hit you, and so much so you your head just began to start to process some of these things that were doing the corners of like, there were things they actually had to tone down some of the rendering so it would be faithful to toys, but they increased some of the other rendering. I do remember looking at door levels, and if you put scene by scene a door frame, which was would be just flat panels previously, now had realistically rendered paint chipped and painted across with it, and so you're able to see just so much more, and then different scenes where you saw the people's hair, the ability to do individual hair, and the light effect going into hair, and they didn't do it with flesh, or they began to do it a little bit with the porcelain of Bo Peep, and this is something which wasn't possible, and this is my scattering, which is where your individual ray goes into a surface and goes through a series of small angle deflections and then comes out again. So this is cloud and skin flesh, so they didn't do that on the actual people, although they put a little bit of a 5 o'clock, sort of comic 5 o'clock shadow on the dad. Now, I suppose the main plot device was Little Bo Peep, and I sort of liked the sheep. They formed a three-headed, single-bodied, six, or it would be 12-legged sheep, and as a unit. So they got the multiple sheep as one, which is rather good, because you didn't have to, you know, there was one sheep but more, so that was clever. My kids noted that there was sort of a conflict with the origin story of Bo Peep. So Bo Peep had to move out, as you had Barbie and other things, and so you Bo Peep had more of an action origin story, which she didn't have before, and there's sort of a bit of a tension there. I think there was a radio control car which has been washed away, and Woody had to save the car at the last moment, and Bo Peep did it, and it was able to touch on things, and you had the problem, I suppose, the problem of the I've forgotten the name of the cowgirl. This is really interesting that in terms of that's one thing. If there was a love interest in the first one, in the second one you had that cowgirl, which is sort of like a feminization of Woody, and let's see, so the second one was the collector, the third one was the kindergarten, and lots of loving, and so here you had the introduction of more fur covered animals, like lots of loving, so the rendering of it and the lighting to do with it. So there's that. You have dramatic things happening to it. So what I found interesting is that at various points you get a certain amount of engagement and a certain amount of fragility. So often in a film you'll see someone being bashed up or someone being shot and someone dying in a film, and it sort of lends a bit of tension or authenticity. You're like, yeah, you don't like it, and the character doesn't like it. And so here, I think you have. I think Buzz Lightyear's arm falls off. Woody's arm falls off. In this one, it goes a little bit further in that you have Bo Peep's arm is broken and has to be re-put together. And there's a very much view of Sarah Connor, sort of the rough American person, and Sarah Connor from The Terminator in this female role of Bo Peep, and sort of the sort of reminds me of my older daughter, in actual fact, the way that's, you know, the there's a sort of a set program of stuff. I rather like the idea of Buzz inquiring about inner voice, and you can press his button, so that it gives you an audio cue. So he presses his button to do all these various stuff. So he has the script put into him that directs where he's going, and I don't know. It's for me there was a bit of a worry. I had to describe. So obviously, being in military training, you have drill. Yeah, attention, left turn, right turn, blah, 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 where you train the person to obey an external arm and have the obedience to commands instinctive. That's why you do drills, and you basically substitute inner voice, which normally mediates anything. So if you say, well, can you come to your own kid, girl? Can you come off the soap and come shopping with me? You sort of, they're more drilling you to train up to give up answering. But there's that sort of understood interface. So, in the military drill, it's this enormous, you realize that it is understood. There is this confidence that you become confidence in your commander, that you surrender for instinctive obedience. So if you're told to get up there to a hill and with particular fire orders, you execute it, because if you don't, disaster will happen. It's that sort of extended personality. So to me, I sort of found that Buzz Lightyear listening to his own external commands and following them was a sort of an interesting parody. And I don't know, that particular model really has to requires obviously a greater degree of training, nuancing, than if you do it now. You can, sort of this ability of people's following inner voice or external voice, when so hard to very challenge it. So if people, so I see this all the time, people following an external inner voice, and if you there's a sort of a series of psychological switches which go into following an inner voice to do something which is sort of a little bit contrary to it. You can't, for me, I take a while to analyze it, and by the time I come back and say, oh, look, hey, perhaps you shouldn't have done this, perhaps this, the die is set. They feel, oh, you're not in your place and stuff like that. I'm going to be difficult in terms of the reflection process to go back over what she did. It can't actually. So I've just come out of that gorge. I've just over the railway bridge here with no major effort. So what I'm trying to really say here is that where I find people defensive is where you say, oh, look, can we go through and sort of do an analysis, because I really feel you should push and, you know, your boundaries in the incorrect position, we have to push back. That's not negotiable. It's like, any actions sort of like a trade. You're like, you bought it from a shop. You can't take a bite out of a pie and bring it back, so to speak. You know, that there's an idea that, may the buyer beware, or, you know, may the forced purchaser of your goods beware of it. So it's very hard to actually slow things down and take it back a step. Or if you do, people say, oh, look, this person is trying to play this game, and I can't really describe it. So at least seeing that Buzz Lightyear do that, then the resolution of who goes with whom and what happens, and so eventually Woody goes off with Bo Peep, and he's had his speaker, 1950s speaker, ring speaker, taken out of him, and it was interesting that there's sort of instruction where the ring speaker and the record's taken out, and it's explained that you can take your speaker out and do all this sort of stuff, and the way that's oriented, but the idea that the toys are changed in irrevocably changed in certain ways. So it's I suppose that had a lot to do to restructure and to get new characters and a new theme going on. I can't see them doing a Toy Story 5. I may be wrong on that one. To come out of it, it created a whole lot of issues there. In terms of graphics, it was I suppose pretty. You've got cobwebs. I do like the I Canada. It was a good thing in the way that they sort of took, you know, that would have gone well with Canadian Canadian audiences, and they had this sort of the French Canadian kid rejecting a toy because it wasn't like the commercials, and there's a referral to the, I suppose, Buzz Lightyear of Star Command at the start, looking at commercial and realising that he wasn't real, and that there's Forky, who on the opposite side, sort of counterposing Buzz Lightyear, believes that it is trash and stuff like that, and you've got this realization, and there is this complex thing that negotiation that people go through in terms of when they're a kid, they're in the family and they're special, and as they move out of the family or reframe themselves, they're not special, and do they actually reconstruct their family security with a internal world where they're special again, which is sort of the underlying deep story, story there, and people's power relationships with respect to is something special, and the your frame of reference. So I think Bonnie had a frame of reference believing something was real, and the parents sort of adjusted for that. And I can see this in so many ways, in that people people believe in, well, a kid can believe in it, but then you can actually have the Queen of England who believes somehow that she's special, and there's obviously no reason for her. And then elected representatives who sort of say on one side of the face, we've got a mandate, everyone's voted for me, I'm not special. Another one, well, in actual fact, I am special. That's why I can have a gradient of proof. You have to go up these processes to explain it to me. Now, as a child, there's not this gradient of truth. So if the child is, I don't know, the child's in their belief system, we're in the above belief system. If we want to convince the child that something is dangerous or something like that, we would say we could inflict it, but the child couldn't, from their position, convey something that they can't do. So I don't know. I find it's a bit hard to describe, but the there's a process here that I find that once people believe they're in a position of power, they no longer are required to account. They're no longer, whereas someone who's lower down has to account for everything they do. And I think this is sort of, dare I say, black crime or things like this. It's power structure. It's sort of like a pecking order, but not in physical violence, but this is in, I have to account for it. It's this sort of childhood fantasy world. They create another fantasy world in which they're in power, and there's this process, belief system that people have, and to interact with it in a sort of deep and constructive way is not to allow them to function. It's sort of like a computer chip, an Arduino computer chip, I have to say. It's capable of running a program, or it's capable of being programmed, but it can't run this program while programming. And this is the individual chip. So when someone's actually in power, it's impossible to say, well, look, we're at this situation because of your operating system. You've made these decisions to go across. So I suppose I've read a lot into that Toy Story. The graphics and the I suppose the defocusing, the sheer computing power is impressive, but it's not such that in this time we've gone from the enormous corny CGI as sort of just a sort of a standout thing or something differentiated, and we have to create an exhaustion gap, a credibility gap, sort of like, I don't know, in theatre, the actors create the prop and stuff like that, but eventually it's becoming so real, sort of like in Harry Potter, everything appears completely real. And I think we might look back to this era, and so in a sense that this Toy Story 4 was an attempt at going a little bit retro. So that's all I have got to say, and I don't know. I have these sort of complex thoughts about the power structure that I've seen and how it plays out and how people seem immune to actually processing it. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.